The pandemic in the last 18 months has really just turbocharged all the trends that we saw. But what we all can do in this moment of rapid change in the nature of the workplace is to create a workplace that's better for women and better for everyone. And we can all be a part of it. I'm seeing a lot of intentionality around companies who are really leaning into addressing inequity and leading into more flexibility, leading into a lot of the things we know can really make a difference for women. So I'm optimistic that we are going to have a quantum leap.
That was Lorraine Harrington, and when she talks about a quantum leap for women at work, that's a cause for optimism. Lorraine is president and CEO of Catalyst, the world-renowned global nonprofit dedicated to building workplaces that work for women. Catalyst works with more than 800 companies, just about every big company you can think of, and lots of smaller ones, to help advance women in the workplace. Catalyst creates tools and capabilities for companies and puts out some of the best research available on women and the economy. I'm Elan Verveer, and this is Seneca's 100 Women to Hear. We are bringing you 100 of the world's most inspiring and history-making women you need to hear. Lorraine, who became head of Catalyst in 2018, knows well the workplace challenges women face. She's been CEO of two Silicon Valley startups and held senior executive roles at IBM and other companies. She's also been at the United States State Department as a special representative for commercial and business affairs. And prior to joining Catalyst, was a senior vice president at the New York Academy of Sciences. Listen and learn why Lorraine Harrington is one of Seneca's 100 women to hear. I'm here today with the president and CEO of the organization Catalyst, Lorraine Harrington. Welcome, Lorraine.
Hi, Milan. Nice to hear your voice.
It's lovely to have you with us. Now, I know that Catalyst works with some of the world's most powerful CEOs and leading companies to build workplaces that work for women. Can you tell our listeners in some detail what Catalyst does?
Sure, Milan. You know, Catalyst was formed in 1962, and our vision is to create a workplace that works for women. And we do that through three mediums. First of all, we have actionable research that we then create tools and capabilities for companies to use on their D&I journey. And that includes learning and knowledge tools, advisory services, and measurement tools. And then we have a community of over 500 multinational companies that we bring together for things like the Catalyst Award, for sharing best practices, to champion the mission together. So through all of that, through this really impactful community, we advance the workplace for women.
And you put out some of the best studies that are produced in terms of women in the economy, for which I know we're all very grateful. This has been a particularly challenging one for women in the workforce with COVID and everything that that's represented. What do you see as Catalyst's role during this time of upheaval? Are we going to be playing catch up? How do you see the next months?
Well, you know, Milan, as you know, this is a really extraordinary time in the history of the world, and especially in the nature of work. So women, and especially women of color, have been disproportionately impacted by this pandemic. And we really need to work to make sure that women aren't left behind through the pandemic. And, you know, the reason for that is, first of all, the sectors that women have been in, which are service-oriented sectors, retail, hospitality, caregiving. And it's also the significant burden that women have on unpaid work, mostly around childcare and taking care of the family in general. So, you know, as we look to coming back, We first of all, we really need to do a much better job of our infrastructure in general, chains of caregiving, and that's why I'm excited that we're looking to have our government spend more focus on that. I hope we have that because the childcare burden is a real hindrance, and the pandemic itself has laid bare some of these inequalities and really has shined a light on that. And there's much more intentionality around trying to do to help that. We also, have a great opportunity here because the nature of work is changing. This big experiment we have on flexible and remote work has been something that Catalyst has been focused on for many years. We know that flexibility, second to compensation, is critical for creating workplaces that work for women. And we talk about flexibility. We're talking about where you work, when you work, and how you work. And, this experiment we've had on office work has opened the lens to a much more broad set of how to accomplish that. And I think in the long run, that is really going to help women and everyone have a much more equitable and fulfilling work life. And I think we need to really lean into that to make sure that that change is permanent.
I think that's just excellent. From childcare to greater flexibility in the workplace, I think it's a great summation of the direction in which we need to move. And it is interesting, and let's hope it's more than interesting, that childcare is now critically seen as connected to women's economic participation. So, Lorraine, you have been president and CEO of Catalyst for a few years now. And you do extraordinary work. And I wonder, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself. You have a background in tech. You're a veteran of Silicon Valley startups and of IBM. What was it like when you were growing up? I mean, was this an area you saw in your future, or did this come later? What set you on this path?
Yeah, Milan, I have a very circuitous path. I would have never thought I'd be where I am right now when I was a child. I was a dyslexic child, so I was awkward. I couldn't read well. I didn't have an extraordinary amount of self-confidence. But what dyslexia did for me is it built resiliency in terms of really having to fail a lot and had to pick myself up again and again. It also focused me on my strengths, which was around math and science. So I was very good at math as a child. And when I got to college, I was lucky enough to have a professor. I was taking a calculus course, and I was actually babysitting for him as well, who became a real sponsor of mine. And he convinced me to take a computer science class at Hamilton College, which had no computer science in at that time. And I had to do a winter study project, but he mentored me through it. And then I applied to Stanford. I ended up transferring to Stanford, and I got a computer science degree in the mid-70s as a woman, which changed my path completely. The other thing I will say is my mother, who was originally a teacher, went back to school and got her PhD in psychology. So, and she had, a very strong career for women of her age. So she was a great role model for me. And she also really helped me through the dyslexia to make sure I got the right skills developed and helped build my confidence. So I think both of those were really instrumental in setting me in a direction that has moved me to where I am.
Well, that's a beautiful story. Two great interventionists, in a way, for you personally, and how that matters in people's lives. Silicon Valley isn't particularly known for its hospitality to women in the tech field, and I wonder what personal obstacles you remember that you faced, if you did, and how you might have overcome them.
Well, Milan, Silicon Valley has two sides to it. I want to say that when I got out of Harvard Business School, I had worked for IBM before, and I made a conscious decision to go back to IBM because IBM was a great place to work for women. They've won the Catalyst Award 4 times. And even when I was there in the 70s, they had women in leadership and they had work-life balance. So I felt that I could have a career there and still raise a family and move my career ahead. So IBM was a great place to work for women. And there were other places, Hewlett Packard, Rome, which was eventually acquired by IBM, which I worked for as well, Cisco. So you, one of the things that I like to tell women is that you've got to be aware of the culture. What are your role models? Do you see people like yourselves? Do you think the culture is going to be one that will allow you to bring your talents to bear? And of course, a catalyst today, building inclusive cultures is critical. Having intentionality at the top is critical. But even, you know, as a 20-something, I was looking for companies that would enable me to grow and be able to have the types of flexibility that I wanted as a woman. And, you know, I followed that through my career in Silicon Valley. I went to work for a woman named Judy Estrin, who is an icon of Silicon Valley in my age. I was able to be her VP of marketing. I was sponsored into that by another woman friend of mine who really helped me. So while there, you know, there certainly is the bro culture in Silicon Valley, there were also pockets where you could make really advance and you could use some of the techniques we talk about a lot of the capitalists, having sponsors, having broad networks. One of the things I also did, I got involved in an organization called Watermark, which was originally the Forum for Women Entrepreneurs and Executives. I became very active in that. I went on the board. I was chair of the board. It really got me really involved in women's leadership. And it helped me have the type of network I need, as well as help give back to women who were behind me and really, you know, solidify my interest in the whole field of advancing women.
So interesting, because what you've just been saying really does reinforce what we know are good practices from sponsors to the whole networking piece, and clearly helped you. Why do you think it's so important to get more women into the tech business, and how do we do that? Because it's still not easy.
You know, this is something I've spent a lot of time on. Before I came to Catalyst, I spent 4 years working with the New York Academy of Science, building their Global STEM Alliance, and really focusing on women's programs, because we just don't have enough women in the physical sciences. So engineering and ICT are the real areas of issue. And, you know, interestingly, when I was in going into the computer industry in the mid-70s, there were actually statistically more women going into it, because at that time, it was considered data processing, academic processing, and there wasn't a cultural stigma to it. But when the PC went into the home, it went into the boys' room, and became a gaming platform, and it started to alienate girls. So we have been playing catch up, even to get back to where it was culturally in the 70s when I was going to college. So, you know, there's a lot of really great organizations trying to help get girls involved in the computer industry. And it needs to be done in middle school when these attitudes start to change. Another thing that I think is really important and something that we need to look at right now is how do we upskill and reskill people into, so they have the digital literacy to be successful in the 21st century. And, you know, the jobs in the tech industry are not all jobs that require a PhD in computer science or artificial intelligence. If you look at it, a lot of companies have been really segmenting these jobs. And when I was at the New York Academy of Science, we talked about soft skills being as critical as the hard skills. Creativity, communication, collaboration, our creativity are really important. And people who understand the customer, who can communicate well, are part of the whole process of redesigning the workplace for technological evolution. So it is critical that everyone have digital literacy skills. It is the ABCs of the 21st century. And we need to have women and minorities have equal opportunity to upskill into those opportunities and then use their strengths to play the right role in this. It doesn't just have to be about, you know, being a hardcore AI CODA. In fact, I'm out here in Seattle with my son, and we were talking about, he works for Microsoft, that there isn't enough understanding of the customer and the applications in the application development process. And that's something that we can also get girls and women interested in, because they're interested in the application aspects of it.
So true. And COVID has certainly illuminated why we need to have women with all of that kind of technological literacy to really move into these times and what they require.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear will be back after this short break.
Now, I met you for the first time when we were both working at the State Department, and you there launched the Global Entrepreneurship Program for Women, which was just extraordinary, hugely successful, made such a difference. So, Lorraine, what are you most proud about from your time working at the State Department and for the United States government?
Well, Milan, I do think the Global Entrepreneurship Program that we launched in 2010 at the first summit, presidential summit for entrepreneurship, was a critical accomplishment. It's one that has sustained itself at the State Department in the office that I was a part of. When I went to the State Department into the Office of Commercial and Business Affairs, I decided to focus on entrepreneurship as my key area. And we were able to develop that as a diplomatic agenda. Because of the U.S.'s credibility on innovation and entrepreneurship, it is something that every country is interested in learning from and for the U.S. to lead on. So we were able to establish this program all around the world in a permanent agenda for diplomacy. You know, and I think that's a great accomplishment. And I'm so glad that it's become part of our diplomatic agenda.
So right. And today we know just how critical women's entrepreneurship is all over the world in terms of growing economies and inclusive prosperity and creating jobs. So this is an area in which you have led in for some time. I want to get back to Catalyst in the couple minutes we have left, because one of the things that Catalyst is most known for is its annual award to companies. This is just a renowned, highly coveted award. What are the criteria? What do you hope to achieve by it? Why does Catalyst do this? And what does it mean for companies? I have been in many meetings in companies and heard them say, oh, you know, it would be so great if we could get Catalyst Award.
Well, one of the things that's Catalyst is famous for is our community and sharing best practices around the leading edge practices the companies are doing. And that's what the award is all about. You know, we've been doing the award for over 35 years. And the criteria is focused on individual initiatives that are really innovative and leading edge and companies that really walk the talk. So, you know, we really spend the time. We spend over 500 hours. We go on site. We interview the managers. We interview the CEO. We really try to understand the ins and outs of the practices that they're doing around the specific initiatives that they've that are leading edge, that really move the ball forward for the company and can be, a role model for everyone. So that's what we try to do. We have criteria. In fact, we just are evolving our criteria to have more focus on diversity because that's really critical. But really, it comes down to companies that are leading edge in terms of their what they've accomplished and have really innovative initiatives that can be highlighted so everyone can learn from them.
So when that companies or those companies are announced as having achieved this award, we know that there's a great deal of success behind what they're doing that is a model for others as well. Just in the last minute we've got left, Lorraine, let me ask you, it has been a very challenging time, as we said earlier. What gives you hope at this time, particularly for women?
You know, I am actually very optimistic. I think we have a once in actually a century. I think the level of change in the workplace that's happening now is equivalent to the Industrial Revolution. We have a major change in the very nature of work. You know, coming into Catalyst 3 years ago, my focus was on the future of work. And we looked at the changes in the way people are thinking about equity. We looked at the Me Too movement was happening. We looked at the technology change happening very rapidly. We looked at the fact that there's going to be more disruption. But what has happened over the last 18 months is this has all been turbocharged. The pandemic in the last 18 months has really just turbocharged all the trends that we saw. But what we all can do in this moment of rapid change in the nature of the workplace is to create a workplace that's better for women and better for everyone. And we can all be a part of it. I'm seeing a lot of intentionality around companies who are really leaning into addressing inequity and leading into more flexibility, leading into a lot of the things we know can really make a difference for women. So I'm optimistic that we are going to have a quantum leap. I don't believe that things just happen like, you know, sometimes they say it's going to be 285 years before we see equality because it's only been going at like 1% a year. We know that change happens in major steps, and we are in an opportunity to have a really major increment for women. So we've all got to lean into this. And that's why I'm so excited to be running Catalyst at this moment in time, because I'm seeing the intentionality around corporations. They're seeing the importance of leaning into equity and diversity and advancing women. And it's my job to help them do that, to find the ways to do that. We know a lot of the things that work. Now we've got to have the intentionality to make it happen. So I couldn't think of a more exciting time to be doing this work.
And I couldn't think of another way to end this wonderful interview than on such a positive note. May we truly go out and grasp that new future in the making that will indeed, hopefully, be transformative. Thank you so much, Lorraine Harrington, the president and CEO of Catalyst. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thanks, Milan.
Amazing. Lorraine Harrington helps us see what an exciting moment we are at right now. Here are three things I took from that conversation. First, today we have an opportunity to make real progress for women in the workplace, but that will require taking action on necessary supports like childcare and flexible schedules and other arrangements. Second, Lorraine shows us how individual success and resilience can come out of adversity. She was dyslexic as a child, awkward and lacking in confidence. She learned how to fail, to fall down and get up again. And she taught herself to focus on the strengths that took her so far, math and science. Finally, Lorraine reminds us that times of struggle are also times of opportunity. The pandemic was hard on everyone, especially women. But she says the challenges of the last 18 months can also lead us to the equivalent of the next industrial revolution. Tune in next Thursday to hear about our next featured woman and discover why she's one of Seneca's 100 Women to Hear.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear is a collaboration between the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio, with support from founding partner P&G. Have a great day.